for instance, can be applied to compute growth rate invariance in tericollabial threefolds, but just one example or computation you can make with that structure. So first, to introduce that, I will have to say something about what I will call abstract loop equations. And then I will try to say how can you apply this blob topological recursion to study matrix models. And then I will speak about the properties of this maybe blobbed topological recursion. And throughout the talk, I will maybe make some vague speculations about why would we care about this thing in enumerative geometry. Okay, so abstract loop equations. For that, I want to take the following setting. I have a bunch of open sets in a curve, which I want to see. I would take local patch around a branch covering with simple branch points. It's something which looks like this. So here you have two sheets of some Riemann surface. You have a cut here. You have some branch points, A. And whenever you have a point Z here, you can send it as a local involution, which sends it to a point iota of D in the other sheet, so that these two points here are fixed points. And iota sends this sheet to this one. So this comes with a covering of a centered open set on the sphere, and it means that here on the base, these two points, z and iota of z, are sent to the same point, x of z equals x of iota of z. So this kind of open set, indexed by some alpha, I consider this setting, and now I want to build. I'm interested in certain quantities, omega 1 0. Which would be a one form on U, which is the union of all U alpha, with simple zeros at the fixed points of iota. And omega 2 zero, which will be so one form. So this depends on one variable z1 in U. It depends on two variables, z1, z2. It should be a one form in z1, a one form in z2, which behaves locally like dz1, dz2, z1 minus z2 squared, plus something regular in those fashions. That's the only singularity I allow. And now I have other quantities, which are, in a sense, something we wrote like this. There are one form in n variables. So it's a one form in this variable, a one form in this variable, and so on. So I write it that way. So for me, this is the vector space of meromorphic forms which have poles only at the fixed point of iota. So maybe I should denote a iota somewhere. Okay. So loop equations tells you, given quantities like this, just constraint on those quantities. And the constraints are the following. So there's a linear loop equation, which is saying that for all n and g, this quantity, so you'd single out one variable and the remaining one, I just denoted zi, plus the same thing. So I symmetrize respect to this local involution. So a priori, this has poles at the fixed point of iota, as the symmetric thing has simple zero at the fixed point of iota. So only the odd part remains of the singular expansion of that. And you have a quadratic loop equation that I will write on the side. Which will ask that, so I will write a big quantity and I will tell you what it should be. So again, I take any n and g, and a set I, which is just a set of variables to n, which do not play any role here. They're just fixed. Plus a sum of all possible ways of sharing this set in two and sharing this G in two. And here are the quadratic combinations where I put Z and the variable belonging to the set J. And iota of Z and all the variables belonging to the complement of J. So again, this is something which has poles a priori in when Z goes to the fixed point of iota. But I will ask that this has double zeros. So actually, it's not too complicated to write down the solution of this set of constraints, to describe all the solutions. And the solution is what I will call the blobbed topological recursion. It is that for all, so you have to know what's omega 1, 0, what's omega 2, 0. But if you know that, for any 2g minus 2 plus n positive, which is all the remaining one, you can write that omega and g of, say, z1 and the remaining variables is a certain quantity, phi and g, plus the sum of residues at the fixed point of iota of a certain quantity, which is minus 1 half the primitive from iota of z to z of omega 0, 2 in one variable divided by omega 1, 0 of z minus omega 1, 0 of iota of z. So locally, that's the inverse of a 1 form in z, so I should multiply by some quadratic form in z so that it's a 1 form I can take a residue. And the 1 form is omega n plus 1 g minus 1 z iota of z and the remaining variables plus the same sum I had here, but here I also had contribution for omega 1, 0, and I want to remove that. So I just put a prime. It's the same sum where I remove all contribution of omega 1, 0. So that's the general solution of these loop equations. So the space of solutions, the moduli space of solution, is basically given by these data phi and g, which I call the blobs. Okay. So if all phi and g are, so I should say that phi and g are a special property. It's not any function. It should be something which is holomorphic near the fixed point of iota. So it's something holomorphic in all these open sets in n variables. So all the divergent part of this omega and g is computed by this part. And that's some holomorphic part. But if you want to go one step further in this recursion on 2g minus 2 plus n, you would have to use the full previous omega and g. So this part matters at the next orders.
So you mean that, so these are holomorphic at the ramification points, but not holomorphic in general?
They are holomorphic on this local, I mean, on this open set.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not speaking about global geometry for the moment. They could have central singularity if you try to analytically continue that. Okay. So if phi and g are all equal to zero, this is, I mean, this just residue formula, I just remove that. It's something which was defined by Enard and Orantin under the name of topological recursion. And it says that for any initial data, omega 1, 0, omega 2, 0, you can compute such objects. And the claim, of course, is that they compute some interesting quantities if you choose correctly the omega 1, 0, and omega 2, 0. So in general, you have that. So the application of that, the first thing that I will show is to compute a topological expansion in Hermitian matrix models. So I will show that. And that will involve in both blobbed and unblobbed topological recursion. An application which was conjectured by Bouchard, Clem, Marino, and Pasquetti is that you take a toric Calabi-Yau threefold, take its mirror, its mirror is a toric vibration, take the singular locus of this vibration, you get a curve, which is called the mirror curve. On this curve, you have two functions, x and y. If you plug omega 1, 0, which is y dx, which is actually log of y d log of x, and your curve is actually a compact curve. So on that, you have a notion of b differential, which has a double polar coinciding point. And if you choose a basis of cycles on this compact curve, which the mirror symmetry gives you, it determines a unique omega 2, 0. And with this data, the omega and g are generating series of Gromov-Witten invariants of toric Calabi-Yau threefolds. So this conjecture was proved by Hénard and Orantin, I think it's last year or 2 years ago. I would speculate that this blob topological recursion might have something to do if you want to do Gromov-Witten, but in non-toric case. But just based on number of intuition, maybe I'll tell you a few hints about that after. Okay. So now I want to show you in the case of matrix integrals, why this structure appears, and where does it come from, and how do you compute the initial data? And by initial data, I mean that, but also the blobs. Matrix models. So by matrix model, here I will take I mean that you have an Hermitian matrix of size n times n, and you want to consider the following type of integral, or the space of Hermitian matrices, exponential of sum of n tl trace of m of l. So that's the one Hermitian matrix with a single trace. So this has been very well studied in the 90s. This was used in quantum gravity because actually it's a generating series for discretized surfaces. So this is a generating series for discrete surfaces made of polygons. So this does not move. So maybe I should do that. So it's a generating series. So it means that you're building some surfaces by gluing polygons along their edges. And you put a weight TL per argon, a weight n to the chi, where chi is the order characteristic of the surface you get. And you count that with, up to automorphism. So you have a symmetry factor. Okay. And this has, because of that, when you take the log of the n, you're computing the generating series of connected Riemann surfaces. So you get some topological grading of this type. And the goal of the game is to compute those FGs. Okay. And this was very well studied by Ambjorn, Makenko, Christiansen, and Chekhov. So there is a recursive way to compute those FGs. And then it was put in the form of topological recursion by Hénard later. Here, I want to extend the class of model I want to look at. Maybe yellow is better. By not restricting to just single choices. So actually, the most general matrix, Hermitian matrix model, which is UN invariant, so that the measure is invariant at a conjugation by a unitary matrix, is of this form. So n to the 2 minus h minus k, this ensures that this has a topological decomposition. And then product of traces. So there are some coefficient TL1, et cetera, LK, H, and then trace of M to the L1, trace of M to the LK. So if you do that, it's again, by certain techniques, a generating series of discrete surfaces. But now they are made not only of polygons, but the building blocks are themselves Riemann surface of genus H with K boundaries. So something like this. So this here, boundaries of length L1, L2, LK, and H handles. And this comes with a wave precisely TL1, LK, H. So you take a bunch of these, you glue them along edges of those polygons to form a closed surface. And this is what this Zn counts. Okay. So one motivation to look at those type of model is that so this type of model were used in 2D quantum gravity or for very simple toy models of string theory, like string theory going with target space being a point or a bunch of points. This one can be used to study much more interesting models. So one example, if you want to do Trans-Simon theory, SUN, on quotient of the sphere by some AD subgroup of SO3, so those are certain Seifert manifold. Well, you can write it this way. So I would say only the contribution of the trivial flat connection. It takes this form, where with some potential V, and then you have a double trace, which is of this form. So I'll just write the form of it. So Ci trace of some function psi of M tensor product 1 tensor product M. So if you expand that in as a formal series in those two variables, you just get product of two traces. And this psi is divided by Pi divided by Pi, and this psi is the expansion of this function. So for some coefficient Ci and Pi, depending on the geometry here, this is a transparent partition function of this, of those three manifolds. So it's one example where you see this extra interaction between the matrices. Yes, so for this type of manifold, there is localization procedure. And you end up with such a model. If you do that, I mean, it's not true for any manifold. What is true is that there is, for any filling of a knot complement in S3, there is such representations for the Trans-Simon partition function. But now the coefficients, you just know it exists. You do not know how to compute them. So those manifolds and the length spaces are among that when you divide by a cyclic group, are the only cases where this series truncate and we can compute it explicitly, roughly speaking. So another type of thing you can do in this flavor is to study quiver matrix models. So by that, I mean if you take a quiver, so the rule of the game is that you plot a matrix for each edge. So let's say I take dimension n for each of these vertices. So you have a product of all Hermitian matrices on the edges with a certain potential. And then for any vertex, you just couple linearly the matrices which are incident. So you have something like that. It's an example of quiver matrix model. CV, so E are incident to V, E and E prime, trace of ME, ME prime. Or you could imagine more complicated interaction. So this is a several matrix model. But if you restrict to one matrix, this one, and want to integrate at all the other one, then because it's invariant when you change ME to U times ME times U dagger, you can absorb this conjugation in the other one. So at the end, what you get, if you compute the marginal of that in ME zero, it's something which should be unitary invariant. And since this thing has a topological decomposition, it should also have a topological decomposition. So it must take this form with certain coefficients that you can compute, which are obtained by this integrating out all the other matrices, which in practice it's complicated, but there is a combinatorial structure behind it. Okay. So that's two examples which fit in this formalism. So now I want to show that for the correlators in these matrix models, you find indeed these loop equations. So the correlators are defined. So the value n, x1, xn, it's the expectation value with respect to this measure over here of traces of 1 or x1 minus m. Xn minus m, but here I want the cumulant expectation value. So by combinatorial arguments, this has a topological decomposition of the following form, 2g minus 2 minus 2g minus n, omega n g, and this omega n g is a generating series of discrete surfaces with n boundaries, and the x's are coupled to the length of the ith boundary. So again, this surface is made of those type of two cells. So actually, what we really want is to compute those ones. I will not speak about the FGs now. There's a way to get the FGs from the omega NG, but it's another story. Okay. So to study that, the technique which is true in any and whenever you have an integral, the integral is invariant under parameterization. Or in other words, you can do integration by parts. So those correlators, there are certain integral over the space of matrices. And by doing integration by part, you can write exact relations between those correlators. So you have something which is invariance by reparameterization. Or integration by part. And this gives some Virasoro constraint on the partition function with some operators Lm, so which has Virasoro type commutation relations. And so that's also something we call Schwinger-Dyson equations. And here these Lm are represented as certain differential operators in those parameters. Okay. So from there, by studying those equations that I will not write, you can draw certain facts about these WNGs. So by analyzing these Schwinger-Dyson equations, first you can show that omega NG, okay, a priori here, I integrate over M, which is Hermitian, so it has real spectrum. So a priori, this is well defined when X is away from the real axis, so in a complex plane, and we'll have some cuts somewhere on the real axis. So when you do this topological expansion, these have cuts, gamma on the complex plane. And the cut does not depend on n and g. It's the same for all the omega n g's. The second type of thing you can draw is that these have square root singularities. So it's generically for generic values of the parameter t's and so on. Square root at the boundary of gamma, so over here. It can diverge, but basically a certain power of a square root times that converge to something. So those equations, I mean, there are functional relation between the WNs, and you can compute the discontinuity. So it's inequality between basically a certain function of x is zero, of the xi zero. You can compute discontinuity against the cut locus, and you find some new relations. So by taking the cut, you can show that for any x on this cut, you find that omega ng of x and a bunch of other variables plus omega ng of x minus. So this x minus means that I am approaching this cut here or from below. And what you find is a relation of this form plus a certain linear operator acting on the first variable of this function. So this acts, it's a linear operator acting on that, seen as a function of x, plus some v and g of x and of xi is equal to zero. So this tells you what's the monodromy of this omega ng around the cut. So the properties of these things, so I will not write what's the O, neither what's the V. I will just tell you what are the properties. This is, and everything here is regular on gamma. So it has no cut, no divergence. It's a holomorphic function of X in the neighborhood of gamma. The second thing is that this V and G, so first V2 zero is x1 minus x2 squared. It's very simple. It depends on x1, x2. And v and g for all 2g minus 2 plus, okay, v and g, if 2g minus 2 plus n is positive, this is expressed in terms of omega n prime g prime for 2g prime minus 2 plus n prime smaller than 2g minus 2 plus n. So this is recursive. And t l1 lk h for 2 minus, for 2h minus 2 plus k positive and h smaller than j with any k. So that means, so this is generating series of Riemann surface with n boundaries and genus G. It means that here, you do not have this part. For all the stable topologies, this part do not appear if initially the elementary bricks of your building Riemann surfaces had no stable components. If you're starting only with disk and cylinders, then you wouldn't have, this part. So okay. So now I have some monodromy around my cuts over here. And you can, I want to do some kind of analytical continuation. I want to come back to my local setting that I had initially. So you can always locally open the cuts. So I map it something like this. So my points here are mapped over there, and I just open the slit. So this domain is mapped outside. And now I can just say that this relation tells you if you are WNG here, it relates to the value of WNG here and to the value of WNG elsewhere as something regular. So using this relation, you can analytically continue omega NG in some annular neighborhood of these inside the cups. So you can take something like that, throw away everything here, and you can build some omega NG of Z, Zi, which is defined in this set, which I will call U alpha. And this relation, so by Schwarz principle, this relation will tell you that you have omega NG of Z, and I have my iota, which is the thing which exchanged, so this with that, but also that outside, the outside with the inside. And the relation tells you that you have a relation of this form. So Zi. So these were functions, I can multiply them by dx of z to make them differential forms. So I told you that this has a property to be holomorphic. So it's exactly the fact that it's exactly a linear loop equation. And once you have that, you can also come back to the Schwing-Dyson equation, which were not linear, and a little bit recast them, and you will find a quadratic loop equation. So using this analytical continuation, so this definition of iota. Okay. So the conclusion of that is that those things here, if I define omega and g, which is W and g times dx z1, dx zn, and well, there is a small shift to do, which is dx of z1, dx of z2 divided by x of z1 minus x of z2 squared for n equals 2 and g equals 0. So that thing solves loop equations. So it's given by a blob topological recursion. Now, omega 1, 0, and omega 2, 0 is the initial data. Well, you just have to compute them by solution of those equations. There's a generating series of disks and generating series of cylinders in this combinatorial interpretation. And I have to tell you what are the blobs. So the phi ng, so omega 1, 0, omega 2, 0, I should say that in general, it's hard to compute. So we know how to compute them for the single trace matrix model, for a couple of double trace like this S3 divided by a group. We almost can compute it. But in general, you do not expect to have a closed formula. It need not be something algebraic, for example. So it's complicated, but it exists. And the phi ng, where there's a way to write it, which is 4 I pi, the contour integral of omega 2, 0, so it depends on z1 and a bunch of other variables. So it's z1, z, I integrate z over the contour, and times my vng, which appeared before. So it's something which is recursive. If you need to know omega ng, you just need to know omega n prime g prime with lower, order characteristic. So here I should say that it's that plus something holomorphic. And if gamma is just one segment, this H is 0. And if gamma is several segments, then these H's are its correspondence with the periods of omega NGs. And the way, I mean, to see that is actually this H are the solutions of this equation, where H is holomorphic in U, and this can have moduli. And the moduli are basically given by the periods. If you have several cuts, you have several independent periods. Okay. So just to speculate a little bit, in general fitting theory on toric Calabi-Yau's, you have localization. So the only configuration you need to count, I mean, to count general fitting invariants, are embedding of curves which are fixed points under the toric action. And for that, basically, all the when you have a curve, when you have this toric diagram, all the stable components, because they should be fixed points, should be mapped at the vertices, should just be completely fixed to a point. And the only thing which remains are disks, which can just turn around, and cylinders. In that case, it's known that there is a topological recursion, so without the blobs. I told you that here in the generating series of discrete surfaces, when you add by hand, if you have elementary bricks which are stable components, which are not trivial, then you get blobs. So I'm wondering if, in general, when the stable components in Grimm-Witten are not mapped to fixed one, but count for something, maybe it could be represented by blobs. It's just an analogy. I don't know if it can be made concrete or not. So how much time do I have? 15? Good. So in the last, in the remaining time, I want to describe a little bit what we know about the properties of this topological recursion, blob or not. So here it's a local construction, and you cannot hope for many properties if you just stay with this formalism. You hope for certain properties when you have a global geometry behind it. It means that I will enhance, I will ask for more than my local setting. I will assume that there is a curve C, a compact curve, which has x and y two functions on it. So they could have some essential singularities, branch cuts, and so on. I just want that they are holomorphic almost everywhere on this thing. And I will choose, if this curve has some genus, I will choose a basis of symplectic basis of cycle of cycles. So you have this curve C. On that, you choose a symplectic basis of cycles. And you have X plays the role of a covering here to P1. And this covering has some branch points. So these A are the zeros of the X. And I will assume that they are simple. There's a way to deal with non-simple branch points, but it's not the story I want to tell now. Okay. So first property of the topological recursion, so without blobs. And it's basically what's proved by Enar and Orantin in their initial paper. So the first thing is, it's not at all obvious that the residue formula I wrote is something that gives you symmetric forms in all their variables. The omega energy might not be symmetric. So it's a theorem that omega NG, Z1, Zn are symmetric. So I can just recall very vaguely how you computed that in diagrams. So imagine I want to draw that as, say, just a diagrammatic representations, as a Riemann surface of genus G with n boundaries which are coupled to those variables Zn. The recursion formula, the topological recursion, tells you that this, if you single out one of them, one of the boundaries, you can compute it as a sum over taking residues at zeros of the x of a certain kernel, which I will not by a trivalent vertex, times two contribution. Either you doing by doing that you lose one handle over here. So if I had g, I will have g minus one. Or doing that you disconnect the surface. And then you have to share all the boundaries here in two and the genus in two. So that was the way you were computing those amplitudes. So since you single out one variable, it's not clear you would get a symmetric answer. But the fact that W20, you ask it's symmetric, implies that this thing is symmetric. So it's one elementary thing. The next thing is what's called a symplectic invariance. So there are some subtleties in a very correct formulation of that. But let's say the statement is that when you change x and y to x prime, y prime, so that dx prime, dy prime equals dx wedge dy, then these omega and g in cohomology, they do not change. So that's a highly non-trivial property and it's a bit mysterious for the moment. But in the case of toric, I mean, application to the toric Calabi-Yau case, this symplectic invariance implies framing independence of the closed sector. So next, you have infinitesimal deformation. So on the space of initial data, which is omega 1, 0, so I should say omega 1, 0 is ydx, and you have omega 2, 0, which is a unique fundamental orbit differential normalized on the acycles. So there's a unique choice of W2, 0 for this data. So on this space of initial data, there is an integrable structure, the Frobenius manifold structure. So you have natural flow, which all commute. And basically, if you change with some flow omega 1, 0 by a certain integral over a chain, so lambda is a chain. So it means it's a formal combination of paths with a germ of holomorphic function near this path. So this depends on one variable, z1, and you integrate it. And if you do at the same time omega 2, 0, so if you define a flow like this, and the variation of omega 2, 0 is given by the variation of omega 3, 0 along the same chain, then the variation of omega n, g is given by this omega n plus, the integral of omega n plus 1, z over the same chain. So you know how those deconstruction change when you change smoothly the initial data. And that changed, for example, the complex structure of this curve. And the last property, which was something proved by in 2 years ago, is that this omega and g, they can be represented as integrals over basically mgn. And I should say mgn, say you have a number of fixed point of these iota of zeros of the x, you should take a number of copies of mgn, which is exactly this number of zeros of the x. So it's an integral of a certain tautological class on this moduli space. OK, so that's we understand quite well the property of this topological recursion here. Now I want to say something about the few things we know about the blob topological recursion. So the investigation of the properties of the blobbed TR, it's something which is in progress with Shadrin. And basically, we know that if phi and g are symmetric in then n variables, then the omega and g are symmetric. And it's equivalent. If you ask that omega and g are symmetric, so in the matrix model, it was obvious that they were symmetric, but it was not obvious that the phi were symmetric. It's equivalent. And for all the other properties, I would say symplectic invariance, is there a natural flow on the space of initial data and blobs? So you have omega 1, 0, omega 2, 0, and this is initial data. Is there a natural flow on that so that you have such relations on initial data? And the last point is, can you represent that as integral MGN? The question for the moment is, we don't know. But what we think is that probably you cannot take anything for the blobs. So there should be some conditions. And what we are trying to do is to find those conditions on the blobs so that we have all those properties. So for example, you should take specific blocks if you want this thing to be a certain integral of something interesting on the moduli space of curves. Okay. So in a sense, it means that among the solution of these loop equations, the abstract loop equations, there are certain solutions which should be interesting for physics or for enumerative geometry, but not all of them apparently would be interesting. Okay. So this is almost all I wanted to say about these loop equations. I just want to make the last remark is that in this matrix model, the way we compute correlation function is by looking at basically the discontinuity. So if you want, the loop equation are on-shell relations between correlation functions. And we reconstruct them just by using these on-shell relations. It's a little bit similar to what people do in supersymmetric gauge theories, where you write down the discontinuity, and then you are allowed by studying the analytical properties of them to reconstruct them. So I do not know if there is a deep reason for that, or even if there is a parallel between the two approaches. But maybe some of you may have ideas on that. OK. That's all.
So is that in one, I mean, in the most normal cases of this phi ig, this block things are zero, because we normalize them all.
Yeah, so if you know for some reason that all the W and G, omega and G are normalized on the A cycles, yeah, so here, I should have said that this phi and g in the global geometry, you ask that they are holomorphic globally. So if you know that omega and g are normalized on the same A cycles, if you choose correctly the omega 2, 0, which is normalized on the A cycles, then the remaining part should be 0.
But the, so therefore, I was wondering, what is, so to say, the simple circumstance that we actually need them and know them?
So in all these matrix models, where you have more than double traces, then you need them. And you know them. I mean, I didn't write what's the V, but V is explicit in terms of the previous omega and G. The other case, so actually these blobs of recursion unifies all the solution of loop equation that have been found before, and in particular the case of multi-cut matrix models, where you do not have a topological expansion, you have some corrections. So it just means that here, it's as if instead of decomposing, having this grading g, just sum over g with some h bar to the 2 minus 2g. So you have still loop equations for these quantities, which are just depend on some index n. And if you introduce by hand blobs, which are derivative, log derivatives of theta functions, so if you take phi n, which is a log derivative of theta, and actually that's, so that's a tensor, and I want to do what? Yeah, that's it. So that's a tensor. I want to construct it with the vector of holomorphic forms. So in multi-cut matrix model, you have to take the blobs which are equal to that. And it's also those type of blobs. So theta with a certain, so if you choose a basis of cycles, you have a theta function with certain characteristics. You can do that for any characteristic. In the multicut matrix model, you know what is its characteristic, and it depends on H bar. That's why this doesn't have a topological grading. But if you want to study asymptotics of knot invariants, and we had a conjecture with Bertrand to compute the asymptotics of the Collard-Jones polynomial, where the spectral curve is naturally some, say, not genus zero curve, and you have to choose this thing with a certain characteristic. And that's this thing which works. So there are two instances where you see it.
Can you use this blob recursion to make sense of singular spectral curves where the zero, dx, and dy coincide? Or?
So the zeros and dx and dy coincide. So I would say the thing that you would need to do for that is to write down the version of the. So I just wrote the quadratic loop equations. But actually, even in this case, you have higher order loop equations. And it's just the way, I mean, if you have simple branch points, you only need those linear and quadratic.
Zero to dx and dy both simple. So in that case, say you could apply it, but then you're.
It's just that the way you derive, and when I say here is the solution of the loop equations, it wouldn't be true anymore. That's the only thing. Because you would have some zeros, some constellations, so we'd have to change a little bit the thing. Maybe you can write it, but I don't know the answer like this.
Also, question: does this shed any light on these beta deform topological recursions?
So, for the moment, no. But for example, if you write for the beta matrix model, which is the simplest thing solved by this beta topological recursion, the difference in the loop equation is that you have something like dx of omega ng, and you could say that. I mean, I wrote this operator O here, which is some linear operator acting on that. You could say that what happens if I take O, which is something like this. So I would say for the moment, so there's a belief that indeed this beta topological recursion, beta or not, it will be solved by the same thing. You just have to interpret correctly what's the residue and so on. But for the moment, it has not been written. Let's say that.
The idea is that I was vaguely imagining that maybe the beta deformation could be implemented by adding the right block.
Yeah. So
is that an idea that?
Yeah. What?
Okay.
So the idea is that these abstract loop equations, provided you interpret correctly what is the value of omega at iota of z, so everything is hidden here, there should be a universal way to write those loop equations, beta or not.
Okay, well, then I think this speaker more time.